Late last month, a judge ruled that a 130-year-old statue of Robert E. Lee in New Orleans could be taken down. It's one of four Confederate monuments slated for removal in that city. And it's a debate that's playing out all across the country. At Yale University, students are agitating to rename the undergraduate residential house named for prominent U.S. Senator and white supremacist John C. Calhoun. And in Washington, D.C., the beloved Ben's Chili Bowl restaurant has a controversial mural of Bill Cosby on a big wall outside. Rene Romano is professor of history, Africana studies, and comparative American studies at Oberlin College in Ohio. And I talked to her about why we build monuments, why we tear them down, and how these controversies play out in our debate about our own history.
When we put up a monument, we are saying not only that this was our history, but this is the past we choose to celebrate. So what they're saying, I think, when they take down those monuments is that in our contemporary moment, that is not the past that we want to celebrate and legitimate and to put forward as the one for lessons for future generations. And one of the things we can say is that putting up a monument is not only legitimizing a history, it's also about who has access to public space, who has access to full citizenship, to civic equality. Since the 60s, really, there's been a long, hard fight on the part of many African Americans and other racial groups to say our history needs to be represented, but also we need to take down monuments that are monuments to white supremacy, because that degrades us in public space.
So where is that line to you? You know, I think a lot of people, whether they're for it or against it, can understand the logic behind removing a Robert E. Lee statue because of the Civil War, because of slavery. What about, and I know you know where I'm going with this, mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson, one of the fathers of the country, who, of course, owned slaves for his entire life, who fathered children with a slave?
Right. So when you ask that question, you're really asking to me how we would weigh someone's accomplishments and the great things they did in their life against the other things they have done in their life that we question or we think were really problematic. Right. And one really extreme example that you can say is that if a man has done evil in his lifetime, he should not be complimented in marble, which is something that Charles Sumner said about Chief Justice Taney, who was the justice who came up with the Dred Scott decision in 1857, saying blacks can't be citizens. And I think that's too extreme because none of us are paragons of virtue, right? I can't imagine the person who is so perfect that they have done nothing in their life which could be called into question. So then again, you're coming back to a political conversation about how do we weigh that person's accomplishments against their flaws? And are the flaws such that they simply reflect the flaws of society at the time that they were living? Or did they further and expand injustice in their society? Were they instrumental in pushing programs of oppression? Thomas Jefferson, I think, is someone who I would be somewhat ambivalent about. I think his accomplishments were very large, right, and really important for the country. Woodrow Wilson, I would have less ambivalence about, and that I think some of the things he did really put him outside of and made him a leader in promoting racism and segregation, and that might outweigh some of his accomplishments.
Is the answer then to put up companion monuments of Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, if you like, or is the answer to take down the offensive monuments? You use the term all, and I don't know that there is an all in terms of identifying a national identity that would be acceptable to everyone.
Right. Well, that path is what we've taken right now, that if you go to many places in the South, what you've seen is Black History monuments or monuments to the Civil Rights Movement going up next to monuments for the Confederacy. And I think that is maybe a middle ground, right, to say, but I think it's actually a really problematic middle ground, because what we're saying there is we can have two separate histories. You can celebrate what you celebrate, I can celebrate what I celebrate, and we don't need to ever really consider the reckoning and the interactions between these two, right, because they really are interactions, right? If we're putting up a Martin Luther King, he's fighting against the Confederacy. So I would hope that eventually we'd get beyond that, simply putting up competing monuments, to saying we need to sit down and have a conversation about how to move forward and who are the people we can value as a society to create a more unified national identity.
Let's talk about Mount Rushmore for a moment. Maybe it's our most famous national monument. There is one not far away being built by a family. It's been ongoing for years and it's unfinished, a large carving of Crazy Horse. And this is a direct statement by Native Americans on whether or not Mount Rushmore is appropriate.
Yeah, and that Crazy Horse Memorial is fascinating. It starts not long after Mount Rushmore is nearly completed. There is a Native American leader who says, I want the white man to know that the red man has great heroes too. And that becomes his mantra for getting this project started. It has been ongoing since the 1940s. It is not completed. It is not near completed yet. I was there last summer. It's a fascinating site. And one of the things that that statue does, carved into the mountain, it is Crazy Horse on a horse, his arms outstretched with his finger pointed out, and it is supposed to represent that these are my lands where the dead lay buried. So it is a claiming of, we may have been displaced off these lands, but this is our heritage, this is where our dead are buried, these are our lands. It is a direct, indirect opposition to Mount Rushmore.
So what needs to happen here, Professor Romano, do you think? I mean, there are national commissions on monuments. More forethought, more diversity on these panels as we go forward, or do we need more panels on what to leave up and what to take down?
Well, I think that the construction of monuments is always a part of a political process. And one of the challenges of monuments is that once they're erected, we lose the history of how they came to be, right? We don't know who put them up. We don't know who paid for them. We don't know whose interests they represent. So that process of construction needs to be one where there is a broad community of interests involved. But in terms of taking them down, I think it's really when a monument becomes a flashpoint, when there are people challenging it and saying, this needs to go because this is reprehensible to us, that we need to have a serious conversation about, is keeping this up worth sending a message to a particular group that you're not fully included? I think it behooves us as polities, communities, to take the complaints seriously and to really ask, why is this so disturbing to this group of people? And is this the message we want to be sending or not? And in 21st century America versus when it might have been erected in 19th century America.
Our identity as Americans, as Northerners, as Southerners, as African Americans, as whites, Native Americans, reflected in the stone monuments, the marble that we erect, and sometimes the marble that we choose to take down. Rene Romano, professor of history at Oberlin College. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
There used to be a huge Christian cross at the apex of Coli Coli Pass near Schofield Barracks, where the Japanese started their attack on Oahu in World War II. Back in the 80s, there was a protest about the cross having to do with the fact that not all who died were Christian, the cross being on federal land and the division of church and state. Eventually, the cross was removed.
Statues and symbols, 8778 My Take is our number for you to weigh in.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.